Today we talked to a family member that completed a 3,000-mile bike ride that runs from the U.S.-Canadian border to New Mexico. It's a pretty incredible story. Background Noise, the Henson Family Podcast, starts right now. Hello and welcome everyone to our podcast. My name is Stephen, and I'm here with two of my lovely ladies, my wife Amy.
Hi there.
And my youngest daughter, Angela.
Hello.
How are we doing, ladies?
Doing pretty good.
Doing good. Nice week.
Yeah. I'm on day two of Weight Watchers.
Woo! Good job.
I think I'm in the groove. So
That deserves some applause.
Oh, okay. Let's
Yay.
Yay. Good job.
Today I think we've got a very interesting guest. Amy, I'll let you introduce who we've got with us.
Okay, so we have with us today my nephew Trent. So we had recently my sister on a show, and her name is Angela, and she lives in Tennessee, and she has four awesome kids, and this is her second son. And Trent recently got married, I think with less than a year ago, so he's a newlywed. And you know, over time, I've noticed he really gets into biking with his Instagram posts and stuff, and he's really taken it to the next level. And but before we get into that, Trent, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well.
Hey.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the introduction.
So glad you could join us. Tell us about, I guess, how did you first get interested in biking?
Yeah, so when we were growing up, I was probably maybe like five. I don't even know. Me and my siblings, we were on the swim team.
Mm-hmm.
And we were also a part of this little, a family friend started this little triathlon, like kids triathlon team. And so like way back early on, I was kind of into that. So like triathlon, mm-hmm. So there's the biking aspect of that. And I did that for a few years, but then the young me kind of got bored with long distance things. And so I kind of quickly transitioned to like basketball, football, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of, I guess, I did all that stuff through high school. But then in undergrad, when I went off to college, I just biked around campus. And sometime around then, I bought an old used road bike that mm-hmm. needed some work done on it. And I remember I broke a spoke on that bike, and I remember bringing it. Sorry, this is kind of a long story. So I broke a spoke on that bike, and I brought it to a bike shop. And I won't mention the bike shop because this isn't a great experience at the shop. But so I broke the spoke. I brought it in. I was like, "Hey, you know, I broke this spoke. The spoke's part of the wheel, and do you have the tool? Can I buy the tools? Cause I want to do it myself. Like I want to kind of work on the bike myself." Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, and he kind of gave me the runaround, like, you know, you're probably going to do this once. Like, you best just like pay us to do it. And I was like, okay, fine. So I drop it off and I pick it up like a week later. And he was like, "Well, you won't believe it, but the spoke actually wasn't broken." And I was like, "What?" I was like, it was clearly broken. He's like, "Nope. Like you may have just thought that blah, 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 whatever." And I was like, what's going on here? Anyways, I ended up being able to ride my bike home, but then on the way, the spoke broke again, of course. And I don't know. It was just super frustrating. And so after that, I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to go online, figure out how to do it, buy the tools, whatever. I ended up taking my whole bike apart, all the way down to the last bit, rebuilt it, learned a lot. It took a long time, but that really kind of just like launched me into bikes. It was like, this is awesome. Like I can fully take apart this machine and put it back together. And it's a long-winded story of how I got into bikes.
Well, I remember so many of your posts, Trent, where you showed yourself taking apart bikes, putting them back together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a big deal.
And you built some custom bikes too. One that was probably like 8 feet tall or something.
I forgot about that.
So I would say like kind of the first phase of my getting into the bike world was the tinkering mechanic phase, I guess. And I did that road bike. I did a couple other bikes. Sometimes I'd buy a cheap bike, fix it up, sell it. Uncle Steven gave me an old road bike of his, and ended up using some of those parts on some other builds and selling some parts and kind of just playing that whole game. In my last senior year of undergrad, I had a friend who had a welder, and I got two old bikes, and I basically welded one bike on top of another. So it was this really tall bike. And that was fun. I think I was in one class in my last semester of undergrad. And so I did things like that.
That was a sight to see. I remember the video of that. Angela Kate, did you ever see that?
I don't remember that.
That was almost like a circus bike. I mean,
I'm going to have to.
Did you ever ride that around?
Yes.
Yeah.
Me and my friends would ride around campus like on normal bikes, but then one of us would be on the tall bike. I don't know. It was always kind of fun because you're riding around. It's also kind of funny because sometimes when you're riding a bike around town, a lot of people don't love you.
I know the feeling.
You know, Uncle Steven, you may have experienced some of this when you were in road biking, but a lot of cursing and honking and stuff like that, even if you're a perfectly well-behaved cyclist like me. But when you're on the tall bike, everyone's your best friend and laughing and taking photos of you and like asking you about it. And so it's a nice experience. Yeah.
Okay, Trent. So I noticed in what you just told us, you kind of, you mentioned that you kind of got bored with the long distance stuff, but we're here to talk about a 3,000 mile bike ride that you did. So,
changed.
For those that are not aware, let me, I've got a few notes here. It's called the Great Divide Mountain Bike Route. And it's, well, officially 3,083.8 miles, which I think it goes up into Canada, and it goes down to Antelope Wells, New Mexico. Trent, I think you started at the border, right? You didn't go over into Canada?
Correct.
And it follows the Continental Divide as closely as possible. 90% of the route is on unpaved roads, and you've got 200,000 feet of elevation gain and loss.
Wow.
That's insanity.
It's crazy.
And then some notes about riding this, and I don't want to spoil anything, but I'll just give just a few notes. Reliable food and water resources on some portions of the route are over 100 miles apart. And you're required to carry a water filter. And let's see, what's the other, another good one? Unpredictable mountain and desert weather can pop up at any time. And this is probably my favorite. Not uncommon to encounter a grizzly, black bears, moose, and occasional cougars.
Wow.
So from the person that doesn't want to do long distance rides, how did you discover, or how did you, find out about this Great Divide route?
Yeah, So after my tinkering phase of bikes, I kind of got into riding on gravel and off-road things. And then I discovered bikepacking, which I've always been into backpacking, and now I'm getting into biking. And so I saw the word bikepacking and I was like, well, that sounds cool. And so I started, kind of learning how do I pack all the stuff that I would take on a backpacking trip onto my bike. I won't get into this, but me and a few buddies, the spring break, like I guess it was that March, right when the COVID-19 stuff was all happening,
mm-hmm.
we ended up riding our bikes for I think about 6 days on the Natchez Trace Parkway and kind of camping along the way. So that was my introduction to bike packing. But once I finished undergrad, I had decided to go to graduate school. And there was about I think like 8 months in between when undergrad ended and graduate school started. And so I had moved to Nebraska where my now wife was living. And so I worked out there for a bit, but I knew that before starting grad school, I wanted to do something like a trip, like do something exciting that it would be difficult to do after, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the things I considered was going on like a big sailing trip, like being a deckhand or something on a sailboat.
Oh, wow.
Doing something, but I don't know anything about sailing. And so that dream was squashed kind of early on. But then I don't know. I found out about this, this route, and it was like the world's longest off-road something. And I was like, all right, well, I'll try that, I guess. I was kind of throwing the idea around. And when I was in Nebraska, I was working at a bike shop. And the guys really hyped me up. They were like, yeah, you should totally do it, you know, all this stuff. And working at the bike shop actually allowed me to get some deals on equipment and a bike and things like that that would have been difficult otherwise. So it kind of just worked out. But yeah, that's how I heard about it.
So did you do any kind of special training, or what kind of preparation did you do for this thing?
So most of the preparation was just trying to get the gear dialed and the bike and everything. Mm-hmm. The physical preparation, I did not do as much as I probably should have. I mean, I commute to work every day. And when I was in Nebraska, I commuted to work most days. And my commute in Nebraska was, I think, about 10 miles each way. So it was mm-hmm. pretty long. So I think that just being a commuter by bike kind of gives me a fairly substantial kind of base mm-hmm. fitness, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't quite starting from zero when I started, quote, training. But really, I didn't do that much training. I would try to up my weekly mileage, but like now I'm doing proper training for like road biking, and I was not doing anywhere near the mileage that I probably should have been doing. But I also read online and things like that you can try to train for something like the Great Divide, but really your first week or two is the best, like of the actual trip, mm-hmm. like you're going to be getting trained. Like you might not start fit, but you're going to end fit,
yeah,
kind of thing. So I was like, well, I'll just kind of go for it.
Okay. So Trent, I got a question for you. So what kind of bike do you have to have for this? And what did you take? You know, I mean, how long? This probably took days, I imagine, right? How long, how many days did this take you?
So the trip in total, I did it in 30 days.
Oh my goodness, 30 days. So how do you pack for that?
Yeah. So
that's the question.
I took a mountain bike.
Okay.
And that's what probably most people take nowadays. Like in the past, maybe 5-10 years, gravel bikes are a thing and have become popular, which are basically just road bikes with the fancy kind of curvy down handlebars, but just that fit bigger tires. And so a lot of people take those. Some people take mountain bikes. I took a mountain bike because it was cheaper and it's just what I had access to. So it kind of had that front suspension that was able to handle the off-road sections a bit better. And then as far as the gear that goes on the bike, pretty much everything that you need to go camping. So like tent, sleeping bag, sleeping pad, water filter, like Uncle Steven mentioned, and extra clothes. It's kind of a little unique because you need all the stuff that you would go backpacking, like all that type of stuff, towel, extra socks, sunscreen, bug spray, bear spray.
Wow.
For especially like Montana, Colorado. But then you also need all this stuff to go on a long bike ride. So you need, you know, spare tubes, mm-hmm. Like patch kit, pump, toolkit, all that type of stuff as well.
That's a lot of extra added weight.
Yeah. And my setup was not light at all. And so part of the fun though is, you know, getting all the stuff, but then just kind of figuring out how to get it on your bike, and you can really nerd out with all the equipment and stuff. But that was part of the fun.
Did you use a trailer, or did you just figure out how to attach everything and strategically put it on the bike?
Did it hang from your bike in certain places?
Yeah, I should have sent y'all a photo. I mean, I guess you could see it on my Instagram. Those listening, I guess you could stalk my Instagram if you want. Actually, it might be private. But
you can promote it too if you'd like.
Yeah, at Trent Marable. You can request to follow me. If you're weird, I might not allow it. So I just had bags that I attached on the bike. Jamie actually helped make. Jamie is my wife, for those listeners out there. Hey, she helped me make some bags that attach. So if you imagine a bike, there's the main triangle that kind of sits between your legs. Mm-hmm. One of the bags that I had is a triangular bag that kind of fits into that triangle. And that's one that Jamie and I made. And so things like that, you try to be really efficient with space. Mm-hmm. And I was able to avoid having a rack, like a big heavy rack or a big heavy trailer. So yeah, you got to be creative, and each bike's a little different. And so each setup is a little different.
I had my, for a few years, I did the cycling thing, but mine was all road cycling. And I was joined a club here in the area, Plano Bicycle Association. So shout out to my PBA folks. But during my years of cycling, I think the longest ride I did was 112 miles in a day. And then the MS-150, I did a number of those, which is 150 miles over 2 days. But all those rides had SAG support. So, and for those that aren't familiar with SAG, it's support and gear. So you'll have, like on the rides I did, rest stops along the way, and you'll have bike shops usually running up and down the road in vans and stuff to provide support for breakdowns and mechanicals and things like that. Is there any kind of SAG support for this Great Divide ride?
Unfortunately, no. That would be nice, and I could have used some SAG support. But I think that adds to, you know, it adds to the adventure a little bit. Sorry, my cat is scratching at the door. There, don't call me. So no SAG support. I think there might be companies that kind of, for individuals that want a easier way to do it, they kind of set up something like that. But no, it's definitely self-supported. And so you need everything. You need to be able to carry everything to fix your bike. And if you can't, then you're in quite a bit of trouble. And as far as food and stuff like that goes, you just got to carry as much food as you need to make it to the next resupply spot. And the Great Divide is notorious for most of those resupply spots are gas stations. Maybe you'll get lucky and there's a dollar store or something like that. And so you're not eating fancy like cycling gels and performance food. At one point, I remember you just eat whatever you can and whatever you're craving. And so I remember one time I pull up to a gas station, I hop off my bike, go in, and I was just thinking, like, oh my, like, all I want right now are some pork rinds.
I was gonna say Cheetos.
And I'm not a fan of pork rinds, but just for whatever reason, craving. The Divide was just telling me to get some pork rinds. And so that's what I did. Now every, you know, few days or so, you do pass through maybe a town or like a city, and so then you can, you know, go to a restaurant or something like that if you can.
And when you say pass through, are you with someone? Are you alone? Is it a group of you?
So I was by myself, but the Great Divide is a fairly popular trip. Mm-hmm. And so there were people that I, you know, everyone's headed in the same direction, I guess, unless you're going south to north. I was going north to south. And so I met people along the way, and maybe sometimes I would ride with a few people, one person for maybe half a day, maybe a few days, and then I wouldn't see them and then maybe one of us would catch up to the other or something like that. So I saw familiar faces and I did get to know people, which was fun. Where I started up near the Canadian border, I started with a bunch of people. It was just kind of like a big group start. And I saw some of those people for the next, few weeks.
Okay.
I could see this happening to me, so I got to know what's the protocol for withdrawal. If you just get into this thing and think, okay, I can't.
Yeah.
Do you just have to have a phone with you and say, hey, somebody come pick me up, or what do you do?
Yeah, I did not have a good plan B, and I think in hindsight, I didn't necessarily need a plan B, so I think that that's a good thing. I mean, maybe it could have been bad. I really did need a plan B. But I think not having a very good withdrawal plan helped me not quit.
Yeah, there's only plan A.
Yeah.
There were definitely some hard days. Like one day in particular was a very, very hard day. And I think if I had a plan B, then I honestly might not have finished, but I didn't really give myself that option. And so I just told myself, as long as I'm not like, as long as I can physically as long as I don't hurt myself or my bike snaps in half or something like that, then I'm just going to keep going. And if it takes stopping for a couple of days in a town and getting a hotel and chilling out, if that's what it takes, then great. I guess I didn't really have a withdrawal plan. If something bad happened, though, then I probably would have just tried to, hitchhike or something to the nearest city and take a bus or something, an airport, something like that.
Is there a time limit, or do you have to complete it in a certain number, amount of days?
So not officially, but my best friend, I was the best man in a wedding soon after the trip, and so I had to finish in 32 days, I think, in order to get back in time. So I think I finished,
don't stay in that hotel.
Yeah, I think I finished. I flew out, and then I think about 2 days later was the wedding.
Oh, so wow.
I really didn't have much time to mess around too much.
Hey, so did you come across any interesting animals?
So yeah, this is a funny story. I saw some black bears, just a few black bears, and black bears aren't quite as scary as a grizzly bear, which are much bigger and much more aggressive. Mm-hmm. I think I saw a couple moose, or meese, probably not meese, mooses. I saw mooses. Maybe plenty of birds, things like that. But there was one day in particular, I remember I was riding with this guy named Ian that I had met. We had been riding for a couple days, and we knew that there was a campsite that was a ways away. And we were like, the sun is starting to set, but if we could just get to this campsite, life tonight is just going to be so much better. I think there is clean water and other things like that. But we had to kind of go up and over this little small mountain pass. And so we ended up kind of riding through part of the night. But as the sun was starting to set and it was starting to get a little dark, I remember we heard something. This was in, I believe, Montana. I think Montana, though. And so this was grizzly country. There's just trees everywhere, kind of in the mountains. We were very remote. And yeah, we heard something moving kind of far off to my right, and I look over and I see something dark, and I was I don't remember what I said, but I was telling Ian, there's something over there, and we both whip out our bear spray and just hold hop off the bike, grab the bear spray, and we're just looking, and he was what was it? And I was I don't know, I have no idea. I thought maybe it was a moose. But
that would be terrifying.
Did you see eyeballs?
Oh, yeah.
Is that
super terrifying?
Yeah.
But what was kind of funny is when I was describing it, what it was, what I thought I saw to him, I was like, I was telling him, okay, I don't believe in Bigfoot, but like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think so. You know, if I had to be honest, I think it was a moose. But if you picture a moose, like looking at you straight on,
oh yeah,
it's got really skinny legs.
Yeah.
And then its body kind of like, you know, gets a bit wider, and then maybe its head is like a little bit skinnier. And that's, I mean, if you look at a silhouette, it's really blurry, like way off on the horizon or something like that. I could see that. Yeah, there's some similarity to Bigfoot. Yeah.
But so Bigfoot, that's Bigfoot sounds more, you know, exciting.
In quote, Bigfoot sighting. But that was spooky for sure.
So y'all didn't end up leaving a vapor trail of bear spray pedaling away.
We did not deploy the bear spray yet, thankfully.
So what would you say is the most memorable moment over the 30 days or moments?
Memorable moments. I'll tell you one quick story, and I know I've kind of like dragged some stories out, so I'll make it a little quick.
Well, I think that bear story was a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
That was a good one. So the very first day I was pedaling up this mountain, and I left with a bunch of people. So I saw, you know, that day I saw several people, but I was going up this mountain. I was talking to this older dude. I was asking him what he does. He was like, oh, you know, I'm just like a snow bomb. I just like ski in the mountains or whatever. And I was like, cool, cool. He asked me what I did. We kind of chit-chatted for a little bit, and I think he kind of pedaled off or whatever. But that night, I was at a campsite, and I was talking to someone, and someone mentioned, or I mentioned like who I was chatting with, like what he looked like. It was some guy named Gary. And someone was like, oh, that's probably Gary Johnson. And I was like, what? That was Gary Johnson. And so for those that don't know, Gary Johnson was the libertarian presidential candidate last election. And
oh,
he was the,
that's interesting.
And he was for a while, he was the governor of Arizona, I believe.
Yeah, oh, Arizona. That's cool.
And so that was cool.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And apparently Gary Johnson does the divide just about every year. And he's probably in his mid 60s, maybe. So anyways, that was cool. And
yeah.
I had no idea who I was talking to at the time, but maybe one of the most famous people I've met. I'm trying to think of another memorable. I mean, finishing was really cool. That was fun. The divide, you're going up and down mountains, looking at all these vistas for, you know, however many miles. But it ends, like Uncle Steven said, in Antelope Wells, New Mexico, which no one has ever heard of unless they've heard of the Great Divide mountain bike route. I think it has a population of like 8.
Oh.
And I think most of those are just like border patrol agents. And so, yeah, you're like going through all these mountains for like a month, and then you dip down into Mexico. And the last stretch is 70 miles about on this one road that just is directly south. No buildings, no,
oh, that'd be hard.
No gas stations, nothing. It's just like a road that leads to Mexico. Little two-lane highway. And so I remember just pulling onto that road and a sign that said, like, you know, US-Mexico border 70 miles or something like that. And it just straight shot all the way. And so it's just, I don't know. It's a cool time because there's not much to look at. It's just the desert. Mm-hmm. And it's a good time to kind of just like, I was just reflecting on the whole month and all that good stuff. So.
Either that last 70 miles is going to motivate you, or it's going to be the opposite for some people. They're just 70 miles, like, you know, but.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a long time, but it is on pavement. And so compared to what the rest of the terrain was, I mean, I thought it kind of went by pretty quick.
What time of year was this that you were?
It was early summer.
Okay.
So that last week in the desert was definitely hot.
And so if you're heading south, you're probably going into a headwind?
You know, it may have been a cross. I don't remember in my head complaining about the wind. Yeah. So I can't imagine, at least on that day, it was not bad. There were definitely days when I was complaining in my head a lot, though.
So when I was looking at those notes about the ride, you know, it did mention that, you know, unpredictable weather. So did you have any, like, just giant swings in the type of weather? Like, you know, one day it's just nice, and then, you know, within an hour or so, it's just pouring, or, you know, just severe changes in weather while you're riding?
Yeah, definitely. So thankfully, I didn't have any encounter with, like, a grizzly or things like that, other than my alleged Bigfoot sighting. But the weather was definitely a factor. I remember, so my worst day, the day that was just really, really bad, it was also my longest day. So it was 133 miles. Before this trip, I had never done a century, which is when you ride 100 miles in mm-hmm. one go. And so this was by far the longest day I had done. And it was through the Great Basin, which is in Wyoming. And it's known as the High Desert. So it's really desolate, really flat, really windy. And the weather can change up there because it's at high elevation and whatnot. And I started off that day really early. I was with a few people that I had been riding with for a bit, but I was just having a bad day. And so I was going pretty slow. And so I told them, like, y'all go ahead. Like, don't wait on me. You know, I'm just, maybe I need to eat more or something. So they rode ahead and I kept going. And maybe about 90 or 100 miles in, most of the day had been pretty clear skies, but I knew that night it was going to potentially, we were going to get some storms. About like 90, maybe 95 miles in, I was really struggling. I don't really know what was happening. I think maybe I just not had enough to eat, but mm-hmm. then also I was kind of rationing my water because it's in the high desert, and so there's not any creeks or anything like that to resupply water. So you could really pop me on, bring a ton of water, camp in the middle of the desert, and then kind of split up into 2 days. My strategy was just do it in one go, but I don't think I packed enough water. So I think that was part of it. But anyways, the winds just changed directions, and then suddenly I just saw lightning and rain and everything coming from the right, and I was like, well, that's gonna hit me in like 10 minutes. And I knew I still had like 30 miles to go until the town, and this wind was like, I mean, it was unsafe to ride my bike because it was so windy.
Oh, wow.
I described that the frame bag, like, goes in, you know, the big part, mm-hmm. the big mm-hmm. triangle part of a bike.
Yeah.
The bad thing about that is it acts like a sail yeah. if you have crosswinds. And so it makes the bike super unstable. So I just had to pull over, and it's like the desert. I had just made it to a road, thankfully. And I was just trying to book it on the road, trying to find something. And there was this little concrete box that was like 4 feet by 4 feet by 4 feet. I think it was like some type of utility thing. I have no idea. But I just pulled over and I just sat down with my back up against this concrete block and kind of on the downwind side. So the wind and the rain was going basically horizontal. And so thankfully I wasn't getting completely soaked, but I just remember sitting there for like about an hour waiting for it to pass. And finally it did. And then I was able to, you know, get on my bike, and it was still a miserable 30 miles in town, but thankfully I made it. But I remember I was sitting there getting kind of wet and just like thinking, this is absolutely terrible. And all I had to eat was Fig Newtons. So I ate so many Fig Newtons while I was waiting for that storm to pass. And it was just, you know, maybe a couple months ago when I had my first Fig Newton since then, because I just avoided
them. You're done.
They just left a bad taste in my mouth. It's like, I don't want those things. I do like Fig Newtons now, though, so that's good.
I just, you know, this whole story, this whole, you know, I just can't even imagine even, you know, doing this, because like I said, I've done 112 in one day, but doing 3,000, that just blows my mind.
That's awesome. Yes. Really awesome.
You know, when I was doing it, it was just like, it was nice because it's the only thing I thought about was just, okay, I just got to ride my bike however many miles today. That's like pretty much all I got to think about, that and like food. And so I don't know, I guess while I was doing it, I wasn't really thinking it was that big of a deal. But, you know, every once in a while, I'll look back at photos and stuff, or someone asks me about it. And I do think like, it is a cool thing, and I'm really glad I did it. It was a really good experience. And
yeah, that's a heck of an accomplishment.
Major bragging rights.
Yeah.
Not many people can say they've done that.
I didn't do the whole divide. I just went border to border because, you know, COVID messed up my travel plans to Canada, but I did do most. So.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, Jamie helped you design some of those bags, and Jamie is a cyclist as well. She likes riding too, right?
Yes, she does. Yeah, she was with me during my dive headfirst into the cycling world, and I've kind of tried dragging her into it as well. And she's come pretty willingly. So
yeah, and am I allowed to say it that she designs cycling gear or cycling clothing?
She does, yeah. So, you know, maybe that's another conversation that maybe y'all could have.
Yeah, we would love to would have her on sometime to talk about that.
So she has started designing cycling specific apparel, mainly geared towards women, but
yeah,
clothing that looks good on and off the bike.
Yeah, and I just got to say, she can sew anything. She's amazing.
Yeah,
shout
she's
out
great.
To Jamie.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely need to have her on, and then we need to do a How We Met series with them.
That's
yeah.
right.
Oh yeah.
We right. So today is what is March 26th, and tomorrow an episode's coming out. The first part in the How We Met series. It's Alex and Christian edition. So
ooh.
Alex is
Trenton's
sister. So maybe we need to do one with Trent and Jamie.
That's right, Trent and Jamie.
Yeah, it's a good story.
How
too.
We met. Yes,
yeah.
It is.
Very interesting. Well, Trent, thank you for joining us and telling us about your story. And
thank you, Trent, for
we very much appreciate you coming on.
Sharing that.
No problem. I appreciate I'm flattered that you guys want to hear about it. I do love talking about it. And so it was also just nice to talk with you guys. We haven't talked,
yeah, we haven't talked in a while. So. Right. All right, folks, that is a wrap for us on this episode. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions or comments about the podcast, feel free to email us at podcast@hensonfamily.me, podcast@hensonfamily.me, and always adopt, don't shop. Thanks for listening.